a brand new episode of the Happy Productive Podcast is about to begin. It's time to be inspired by simple and actionable solutions for you and your business. If you're an established entrepreneur or just laying down the first brick of your future empire, the mantra is the same. We will flip any failure into a positive and use it to our advantage. This show is all about turning coal into diamonds. With the right plan and mindset, anything is possible. I'm Jennifer Dawn, your host, business coach, and founder of Best Planner Ever, and I'm here to help you achieve all your ambitious goals. Success is closer than you think. Let's do this. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the Happy Productive Podcast. I have to tell you guys that when I read Tiffany's initial bio, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to talk to this woman because she has so many amazing things going on and I cannot wait to pick her brain. So Tiffany Sauter, welcome to the Happy Productive Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
I'm super excited to talk with you. Okay, you guys. So Tiffany has four kids.
Yep.
Three businesses and two careers that her and her husband are managing and having tremendous success in. So Tiffany, just tell us a little bit of your backstory and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, Jennifer, you've been around long enough to know that sometimes the story after the storm looks a lot more peaceful and calm and beautiful. And like many, we had to go through a lot of wrestling with some hard things to get to a place and space where we do have a lot of peace and we do have a lot of, I would say, just like personal joy and have been blessed with some business success as well. But I'm a small town kid, like in the truest sense of it. My grandpas were farmers and pastors. My dad was a farmer when I was a little girl. And then when I was in third grade, I promise the story will not take a year by year genealogy, but it's like, I think, helpful context to juxtapose the life I live today. My dad started his own business when I was in third grade. I'm the oldest of four kids and my mom stayed home. And so I grew up around a lot of risk. I grew up watching my dad learn business. He, you know, we grew up in a very agricultural environment. And so for him to start a business in our small town, it was sort of like the Willy Wonka, you know, like somebody building a glass house or something like that. Like it was kind of the weird thing that was happening. And so I grew up around a lot of risk and curiosity and seeing my dad just try a lot of stuff and ultimately was very successful. But I didn't grow up in the success part. I grew up in the trying part.
Yeah.
And so when I get to my career, I go to college, I get a finance degree. I had some experiences early on in high school where I started to realize my brain does this finance thing pretty well. And so I just kind of kept marching towards the talents that I felt like were in me. And so I got a finance degree from Purdue and I started working at Lilly. And I was like a small town girl who dreamed of the big city. I was so attracted to like women that I saw wearing bright clothes and walking really fast. And they had a big bag and they were in the airport and they had somewhere to go. And like that energy just like woke me up as a little girl. I was like, those people are fascinating to me. And so, you know, I go to a great big company and I kind of think that that's where I'm going to make my mark and have all this independence and be important. I realize, wow, it's going to be a really long time before they let me do anything of any substance, kind of rightfully. You know, I'm 24 years old. What do I know? So, yeah. So I kind of realize that it's going to be a long time before I have any real impact. And I've since learned I'm very driven by significance. And so I leave my big corporate job and I convince my dad to buy this small little agency when I'm 25 years old. He pays $30,000 and I essentially say, I promise to work until I die, you know, to make this thing successful. I didn't really know marketing, but it had a lot of the same thinking patterns as finance. And I don't need to go into the details, but my brain just sort of understood it.
Yeah.
And so over the next 17, 18 years, yeah, I met a man who also was going to have a big career. He went to an Ivy League. He played football. Like all this like sort of achievement stuff was in the water for us and served us until it didn't, mm-hmm. as you know the story. And so, yeah, we both are chasing our careers. I grew up in a big family. I always dreamed of being a mom to a bunch of kids. And so we had four kids across three different decades, one in my 20s, two in our 30s, and one when I was 40, which I'm not sure I recommend. And so here we are, yeah, with, you know, having these businesses that we fought hard for. And, you know, I say I was born with a heart of, I just have so much curiosity. And I think I naturally was born with a lot of energy. But figuring out how to piece that together where the people around me were not exhausted, figuring out how to do it in a way where I was honoring my actual values and in a way that I was being discerning about what was getting my energy when. And so in that journey, you know, between then and now, we certainly had a big crash. We can talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, I am excited about creating resources for two career families. We live in such a moment of opportunity, but I think there's some silent suffering that we don't have the courage to talk about. And so that's what brings us to today.
Oh, so great. And you're right. I think there is so much silent suffering going on. I actually have a new book coming out April 30th called The Apple Stand, How to Rekindle the Love for Your Business. Mm-hmm. Similar concept where there's so many business owners. I think we smile to the outside world. We're dying on the inside. We're suffering alone. And it's not good. And these are conversations that we need to start having. So I love that you brought that up. Talk to us a little bit about, like, when you said, you know, it was working until it wasn't working, or the crash. Like, what did that look like for you? Because I know there's a lot of people who are probably like in a similar position, and we always feel like I'm the only one who has this problem, or there's something wrong with me, and it's not true. I've lost it all and started over four times. I hope it never happens again. If it does, I know I'll be okay. But what did that look like for you, that realization that, like, you know, this just isn't working the way what happened?
Yeah. So, you know, I think as an entrepreneur, you know, while I didn't start the business, the revenue was about $300,000. So it was like, it was a really small little company that was like...
Was this the Element 3?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We rebranded it and stuff. But yeah, it was a small little, essentially, you know, startup.
Yeah.
And so in the beginning, you do kind of have to give it everything because you don't know what you're doing. And I didn't know when to stop that habit of giving it everything. And so what the crash looked like for me is we were about 12 years into the journey. Element 3 had been on the Inc. 5000 list 6 years in a row. And externally, I was like the most decorated person ever. I was this young female that had this business that was growing really fast. You know, I like sort of like walked across every stage with 40 under 40 and Inc. 5000, all this stuff. And I was like, oh, look at me. This is success. But what was happening inside of the business is that I didn't know how to scale the operations. And every year when we were growing, I was making less and less and less money. And for all the risk I was taking on with the, you know, just the time it was taking from me, I mean, I could have made so much more money just going and getting a big corporate brand strategy job or something. Yeah. And the expense in my family started to get so high. I wasn't with my kids. My husband's and I's marriage was really struggling. And we were good at pretending that things were okay, but our actual relationship was just, we were just miles apart. We were functioning well. We weren't big angry fighters, but we did not know how to be there for each other in any way. And so we were both like dying of loneliness.
Yeah.
And I finally got to the place where one of my key employees came to me. He now is the president of Element 3, but he came to me 5 years ago or so. And he's like, I can't be a part of this anymore, Tiffany. And that he was my trusted confidant. And I was like, why not? And he's like, you don't see that this place is like burning. I was like, what do you mean? And he spoke truth into the situation in a way that my optimism, my energy, I couldn't see it. I kind of couldn't accept how bad it was because I wanted it to be successful so badly. And I had all these external accolades to point to, but I wasn't able to pay people a bunch of money. I wasn't paying bonuses. I wasn't taking a significant amount of money out for myself in a way where like this made any sense. And so I finally was like, well, if we don't do this, what do we do instead? And I think I was panicking that I didn't have a better idea. Mm-hmm. And I've since realized you can't solve differently until you first admit what you're doing is 100% not working. And once I could accept that reality and you kind of learn to separate your own identity and personal failure from being like, the business is failing. It does not mean I'm a failure, but it does mean I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So what do I do when I don't know what to do? I go seek counsel. I go get people who've done it before. I start opening my eyes to different solutions. And I was just like modeling the definition of insanity of doing the same thing over and over in a very cheerful way.
Yeah.
Acting like it was going to get a different outcome, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I think it was that key employee coming and speaking truth, and my husband and I really saying, we demand excellence in every area of our life. Nobody in our lives would dispute that. How can we accept such a crappy version of us? Like, why is that the place that we would compromise? And so, you know, through lots of tears, and it's not a neat and tidy process, but you have to admit, this first version of our marriage is over. This naive fairy tale love that we got to experience at the beginning, that version of us is over. And we have to decide if we can rebuild again together or not. And that's very scary. Very, very, very scary. And so I'm grateful that I get to say I've been married for almost 20 years, but there's two marriages in there. And we had to rebuild on who we were, what we needed from each other in this more evolved version of ourselves. And we needed different tools in our marriage. And we had to kind of bury the old one and say, well, how do we go forward together? And those are both scary, to let go of control, the illusion of control. I thought I had control over the business. I thought I had control over my marriage. And to kind of lose him to find him again is a really scary process.
Yeah, it is a really scary process. And you said so many really good, good things in there that I just want those listening to really hear, because I tend to be a happy, optimistic, positive person. And so I think a lot of entrepreneurs, like, it's hard for us sometimes if we're that happy, optimistic person. My husband is, he's Jewish, and he has that whole like Jewish thing going on. No disrespect, where like everything's wrong. Like, if him and I, when we both walk into a room, I will find everything right with it. He will find everything wrong with it. And I think as business owners, sometimes we don't like want to minimize the things that are wrong in the business. It's kind of like, oh, it's not that bad. And oh, hey, we're doing good. But like having your employee come to you and like burn that down and give you that truth and tell you that, like, sometimes I need that when my husband, he's like, hey, that person is using you. And I'm like, no, they're not. I don't want to hear that. And it's like, wait a second, he's right. Like, because they see it in different ways. And I think sometimes we tend to put that like shine on top of things that really need to be burned down. So that way we can then rebuild it in a new and better way. So I love how you said that. And I love how you said, even in your relationship. So it's like the business had to be done differently. The relationship had to be done differently, because it'll only get you like so far. And then you get to a point where it's just like, you can't get to that next level of success or happiness or whatever, unless you change, unless you do things differently.
Yep. I think people get stuck because of that. They're not willing to discard, because my work ethic, my optimism, my courage was such an important part of our journey to get to where I broke it.
Yeah.
And I had to learn that, like, I don't need to say I was wrong. I just need to be more quick at discerning, I don't have the toolbox to move us to the next level. And that's okay. That doesn't mean what brought me from point A to point B was wrong. That doesn't mean what took me from point B to point C was immature, stupid. I just need a different toolbox. So yeah, I think you're exactly right, Jennifer.
So what did that process look like for you once you came to, like, okay, the reality of these things are really maybe not working. We need to like bury marriage version one and start to create version two. So what did that process look like for you as far as like getting help, resources to kind of do this rebuilding?
Yeah, I'm very verbal. So I always need to say it out loud, because to me, that feels like the point of no return. I'm not a quiet journaler. You know, I'm like, I gotta say this. So with the business, I literally said to the leadership team, if we continue on, the business will no longer exist in 2 years. Like, I'm just certain of it. I don't know what's going to get us. I don't know if it's going to be the run out of cash, or that we lose a big client, or all of the things combined, or I just get burnt out. I don't know. But in this business, the way it's architected, is not going concern. It no longer, it just can't exist this way. And so I want you to know, I am going to make some radical changes. I just don't know what they are yet. But I had to admit its failure, and I needed to get them to see it with the same intensity that this is not a kind of thing. This is like something is going to have to really change.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing there. That was really the trigger for us to move to EOS. Are you familiar with EOS?
Yeah, love it.
Do you use, you use that system or have familiarity with it?
Yeah, I love the whole thing. Love Traction, love the book, love EOS. It's interesting. I've done so much coaching around EOS. The way I found out about it was I have a client many years ago that we were working together, and he's like, Jennifer, have you ever heard of EOS? I'm like, no. He's like, you should check it out, because a lot of what we are doing together is what they teach in EOS. And so of course I read the book Traction, if you're listening, Gino Wickman, love the book, love the concepts. EOS tends to have a lot more meetings than I want to have in my organization. And in executives that I've coached, that's one thing they're just like, they complain about. They're like, I can't get my work done because I'm in too many meetings. But love all of it. So I love that you guys found it. And then it sounds like you guys implemented EOS, and that was a game changer in the business.
I mean, we did a series of things, but that started to drive a level of clarity, decision-making, and I would say pruning inside of the organization. Again, my eager creative mind had just created a lot of distractions in the business, and my leadership team needed a format to be able to tell me no. Yeah. And it created that. Yeah. EOS has a ton of common sense in it, but when you're in your own jar, you just like can't see it.
Right.
And so, and again, I was 24 years old when I started running Element 3. And so I hadn't really worked inside of an infrastructure before, of an operating system, of communication cadence, of knowing when to diverge and think of every possible thing you could do, when to decide and move to implementation and kind of get out of ideation mode, how to run tests well against different concepts and ideas. So it matured us as an organization. We hired an implementer. We went all in. In our first meeting, I told him, we will be your best client. Like, we will, with every ounce of intensity that I have in my life, I'm going to bring it to this thing.
Yeah.
And I was the opening keynote at the conference last year. So I told him that was my proof to him and to me that we were the best.
Forget all the stuff I said about what I don't like about it. We'll just like scrap that.
No, I mean, I'm not an EOS employee. I mean, you have to customize it for your organization. You do. I think you have to customize it to your organization's size.
Yeah.
I think you have to customize it to your own maturity as a leader. Like it is a framework.
Yeah.
It is not a magic pill.
Yeah.
And we don't do everything exactly, but we started doing everything exactly the way it is. This is what I would tell people. If you have a business that is failing or not as successful as it could be, don't negotiate with the program as the starting point. Because people make all these complaints. It's like, well, if you knew what you were doing, your business would be pooping out cash.
Exactly.
So it's not. So get over yourself. So that would be my tough love.
I love that. I love it. I love it. Because at the end of the day, the thing I do love, it is so much common sense, but it's a framework. It's a structure. Yeah. It just gives you as a business owner, like, I don't know about you, but I wasn't trained in how to be a business owner. I started my first company when I was 23 and I just jumped in, and you just sort of like learn as you go along. So that is one great thing I love about having some structure, some like, here's how to do it from people who have already figured it out ahead of you of what's worked. So you don't have to spend so much trial and error time. You can just start to implement systems and process that are already proven and tested.
Yeah. And this, exactly. And then in my personal life with our marriage, I would say the same thing. You know, we said out loud to each other, like, this is not working. Like, in a way that this is not working. This is not sustainable. I didn't lay in bed as a little girl and imagine this is what being married felt like. And I'm not okay with that. And you shouldn't be either. I don't need to be a princess, but I do know what feeling loved feels like. So we had some really hard conversations, and then I joke, we went to like the juvie of marriage counseling. We went to this thing that was, I think, 5 days, 4 nights, called Hope Restored. And it's like triage for your marriage. And we tried going to marriage counselor. My husband is a very accomplished senior executive as well. And the like 1 hour a week from like 1 to 2 on a Wednesday afternoon was like, it felt like somebody was just putting my face in a blender. It was like, I'm like not in the space. It was not working for us. So I learned about this organization and they said it was like 6 to 12 months of marriage counseling, like in a week. And I was like, well, we need a triage version of this. So, and it was life-changing for us. You know, everything wasn't perfect, but it gave us new vocabulary. We were both really committed to kind of feeling stupid in front of each other. Like when you're trying new ways of communicating, you feel kind of insecure and vulnerable in front of somebody that you're kind of learning to retrust again. And so, you know, it was hard, but I was really clear that getting divorced was also going to be very hard.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to, just like I did with my business, like I'm going to bring every ounce of my intensity to this process and pray that, you know, we are given the grace to be able to get through this. So I think admitting it is the first step and being able to feel like a beginner in your most vulnerable moments is hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the secret.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard, especially for high achievers, I think, because we just sort of get used to a certain level of success. And then I think people also will compound that because they look at you from the outside and go, oh, you're so successful. You don't have all these problems. And I think that adds a little bit of pressure to it as well. So I love what you said about just being willing to be vulnerable, not perfect. Even from a very high achieving person, like being able to be okay with being uncomfortable and being in that space.
Yep, totally.
Yeah, love it so much. Okay, so tell us, I saw on Instagram, because I was cyber stalking you a little bit, on Instagram, you have a new course that you're teaching to help people with this. And so tell us a little bit about what that course is.
Yeah, so let me maybe give you a little genealogy and then I'll talk about the course in particular. Yeah. So a little over 3 years ago, I started a podcast called Scared Confident, still is a thing. And I don't know if, you know, you found in your journey of creating, you know, audio content for a really long period of time, it's a process of kind of figuring out, what do I have to say?
Yeah.
Like, what is my passion? What content comes most naturally to me? And so in that process of creating, I started to realize, man, the thing I'm making is a tool I wish I'd had. You know, I shared at the beginning where I grew up in this agrarian environment where there was not a lot of working moms. And if they were, they were working because they had to financially. And, you know, I live now in a city and we have a country club membership and my kids are always driving in a luxury car. And it's like, this was not my childhood. I was on like bobcats and skid steers and picking dandelions. You know what I mean? So, so how do we navigate this world that we find ourselves in this two career environment? So as I started creating more and more podcast content, I was like, man, this is what I want to create. That crash that I talked about where I gave my business too much and my family too little. And I like to run a tight ship at home. I do not like to live in a mess. I do not like to eat takeout every day. And so I was like, how do I keep my standards and still have time for adventure and exploration and entrepreneurship and ideas and not kill myself? I'm not going to lose 30 years of my life to blind exhaustion.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just celebrate 50 years of marriage because we were too lazy to get divorced. Like, I'm not going to do this. And so when I started demanding excellence in every area of my life, I started solving differently. And so this course, Life of And, the Life of It And Academy, is literally the toolbox that I used to rebuild the communication inside of our family, the agreements between my husband and I about what our priorities were going to be, and the systems that I run our household on. I talk about if we allow the ordinary shit in our lives to take 95% of our capacity, laundry, food, cleaning, telling our kids to clean up their house, driving our kids around, calendaring, like last minute solving for who's going to pick somebody up. That is not living.
Right.
That is managing our life.
Yeah.
And I don't want managing my life to be 95% of my life. I want to get the ordinary to fit in the smallest possible container so that I have space for all the extraordinary stuff in my head and all the extraordinary people in my life. And so when I started looking at my life like that, I started making really different choices. I started putting in different systems. I started putting in different programs and it started like running our lives in a way where we have time for so much great stuff. Our kids are in so many things. My husband and I get to be out with all this stuff and I don't come home to just a mess that is crying my name and I have to pick between feeling caught up and feeling rested. So that's what the Life of And Academy is it's my attempt to put people in my pocket and say, this is how I've done it. And I don't think what I went through with my marriage and my business had to happen. I think it did for me. And I hope I can help other people avoid that by helping them create just an operating system inside of their household so that they can exchange chaos for connection.
So inspiring. Can you give us like an example of a tool that somebody could Sure. find like in the academy? Are these things that they can like put into practice right away? Or what does one of these tools look like?
Yeah, so I can give you like a practical system that I use, and then I'll give you maybe more of like a communication relationship one. We'll do one of each.
Yeah.
So one of the tools that I teach is called the morning roundup and the evening wind down.
Okay.
The morning roundup and the evening wind down. So those are the things that are the most ordinary that set your morning up for success. I don't know about you, but when I walk out into the kitchen in the morning, I do not want to see crumbs all over the place, yesterday's dinner, a sink full of dishes that didn't get put in the dishwasher. I don't know, everybody's containers from their lunches the day before. Like I want to walk out and be like, this is a fresh start to the day. So the evening wind down is making those lists of things that happen every single night before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's running the dishwasher, wiping down the counters, sweeping the floor, looking at backpacks, refilling mm-hmm. water bottles. And I have a list on the fridge. So whether I'm home or not, the household knows these things have to get done. This is how we as a family start fresh. I heard somebody explain once, it's like a restaurant, how they, everything is wiped down, everything is clean. And so that the next morning you can start, the kitchen is fresh and it's ready for new customers. And so thinking about our household in that way of how do we wind it down? Mm-hmm. The day was put together. We do a 10-minute pick and put, which means I set a timer for 10 minutes and everybody finds something and puts it away. Pick nice. It up and put it away. I have 4 kids in my house and me. Whoever's home, I just say, this is, we're doing our 10-minute pick and put. And we have it done in 3 or 4 minutes. But then I'm not like schlepping stuff around, putting a puzzle piece in a thing. Like everybody can be helpful.
Yeah.
So that's an example of the evening wind up. My morning roundup, I like to work out in the morning. And so I don't have a lot of stuff I do in the morning. We pack lunches at night. I usually will check permission slips. There's a few things on my morning roundup, but most of the stuff is done at night because I like me time in the morning.
Yeah.
But again, my family knows that. I'm not packing your lunch in the morning. I'm not filling out your permission slip in the morning. You know, if that stuff needs to be done, the evening time is when you're going to get me. So that I am also a customer of my life and I'm training my kids when to get what they need from me. I'm not an always open convenience store. Does that make sense?
I mean, I am to love them.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I am to love them.
Yeah.
But I am not a vending machine.
Right.
I have things I'm trying to get done too. And I will work my face off to support them in their activities.
Yeah.
But we have to be a team.
I love this so much, so much. Great, great, great stuff. I have 3 children that are older. And so one out of college, one in college, and one that is a freshman in high school right now. So I don't have the little kids. I don't have the packing lunches anymore, which is kind of cool. And it's kind of weird all at the same time. But this is one thing with my children that I always have taught them to be very, very independent. I'm your mother, but my job is to raise an adult. It is not to put another, a large baby into the world. And so I think what you're doing by empowering your children of teaching them like, this is the system, this is who we are, this is how our family is, and that we need to take responsibility and we need to do some of these things. Like, I just love that so much because you're just setting them up to go into the world as highly functioning adults. It's ridiculous how my son is at Penn right now and he has roommates that don't know how to cook, don't know how to do laundry, don't know how to like navigate like basic life because everything was just done for them. Mm-hmm. And they came from like, my son did not come from wealth. He worked his butt off to get into an Ivy League school, but there's so many people there that are, you know, legacy and very wealthy, and they haven't had to do these things to just be like functioning adults in life. And so I love that you're doing this and teaching them. And, you know, as parents, as mothers, especially, like, it's not my, I'm not your slave. I'm not your slave.
I'm your mother. I'm on your team.
That's right. That's totally. Right.
Yeah,
exactly. But I am not here just, I'm not your slave. That's it. Mm-hmm. So I love that you're doing this. Love it. Love it. Okay. You said you're going to give us an example of the second one. Yes.
Yes. More relationship thing. So I want to talk about this concept of implied expectations versus explicit agreements. Mm-hmm. Implied expectations versus explicit agreements. So we'll kind of go back to this like clean space thing, because it's a real trigger for me. So my husband travels a lot. Most of the time I've chosen to be kind of the one grounded. Mm-hmm. I travel very little. So we run our system every day of this thing's happening. But sometimes if my husband's home and I have like a dinner out with girlfriends, or I need to go out with a client or something like that, I'll get home at 9:30 or something like that. And what would happen is I would walk in the house and it would look like, you know, dinner was still out. There was kind of like schleppy, a little bit put away, but not really. And there was shoes on the floor and like all this kind of stuff. And so I would just get pissed.
Yeah.
And I would be like, this is so disrespectful. I can't believe that you haven't like done this. You know, this is important to me. And I would just have this like narrative playing out in my head. And I would just get madder and madder and madder and madder and madder. And until I was like, I can hardly stand to see you. You know, just like mad. Yeah. I just felt so disrespected. And so one night I was like, are you kidding me? And he was like, what? And I was like, it's a mess in there. And I realized two things. One was he didn't actually see it.
Yeah.
He did not see it and think, I am going to leave this for her to clean up because she's the woman of the house. He did not think that.
Right.
Because I wanted to hate him as much as I could. That was what I said in my head. You know what I mean? He did not even see it.
Yeah.
He is gone all the time. Just being home in any capacity, it being clean or dirty, is a luxury for him. Yeah. And so he was like, I didn't see it. So that was first. And the second was, I realized he never agreed to it. Mm. I had never said to him, babe, when I'm gone, this system that you know that I run, it is like, I feel so loved and seen if you and the girls work together to do that, so that when I walk in the house, I don't feel like you guys are just like flipping me off. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I thought you liked to do it because you think you do it the best. And I was like, well, I do think I do it the best, but I would feel so loved if you guys would just do it. And he's like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
So that was moving something from an implied expectation. I was like, I've never asked him to do it. I've never told him I want to. I've never asked him told him it's important to me or that I feel loved when he does that. But once we talked to him, he's like, yeah, no problem. And 100% of the time that I've been gone, and he's like, girls, we got to run the system. Mom's not going to get home in time tonight. They do it. And it is not a begrudging thing. So when there are these moments of friction, is it because you have this implied expectation that that individual doesn't even have the advantage of knowing doing this for me would make me feel loved? And so moving it to an explicit agreement where the other person, who is a grown up actually and gets to decide what they do with their time, or they don't do with their time,
yeah,
then they can say no. One is, my husband loves to put his coat on the back of the chair. I don't know why. And it drives me crazy. And I'm like, B, will you hang it up? He's like, I just won't. He's like, not because I'm trying to disrespect you. I was like, it's fine. I'll deal with the coat. You know what I mean? Yeah. If I want it hung up, I can hang up the coat. And now it's like a little bit of a giggle. Like, it's just a sign he's home. And I like have started to think it's funny.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean he's like, no, I like, he can say no. He's a grown, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to. It's my house too.
Yeah.
Like, that's fair. I'm not mad about it. You said you wouldn't agree to it.
Yeah.
If I want it hung up, I'll hang it up. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's like, fine. And those are the little things times 1,000 that eroded the first version of our marriage.
Right. Right. So powerful. So many great tools. I love so much that you've taken all of this wisdom, hard fought wisdom, and like put it into a course so that you can help other people avoid some of these pitfalls that you had to deal with, and that these like tested things that you found that have really worked well that you're now sharing with other people. I love that so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Jennifer. Well, yeah, if people are interested, we can talk in a little bit about where to find it or get access to the free version on my podcast. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. So tell everybody about your podcast, and then tell everybody where they can find your course, and then anything else that you want to share, any other resources that you want to share.
Sure. So yeah, my podcast is Scared Confident. Scared
I love that name. So good.
It's sort of the posture of somebody who starts lots of things, and you do have to show up in a way that's confident. So Scared Confident, and it is really tools and resources, encouragement stories for two career families. Mm-hmm. And if you go to TiffanySauder.com, Tiffany Sauder, S-A-U-D-E-R.com, mm-hmm. That's where you can find the Life of And Academy. And we're putting people in classes through the course. So either the wait list will be open and you can let us know you're interested in learning more, or maybe if you catch us in a 2-week cycle where the card is open, happy to enroll. But we're kind of running it in cycles as we kind of support people through the program. But yeah, we'd love to. And on Instagram, Tiffany Souter, that's where you can see a real upfront look at my life of Ann.
Oh, so fantastic. So fantastic. And you guys, we will put everything for Tiffany, all the links into the show notes as well, so that you can find her really easily. Tiffany, thank you so much for being here with me today. Thank you for just being so open and honest. I think it's so important to share these stories so everybody knows, like, we're not alone. We all go through these things, but such a ray of light and such a ray of sunshine to just be like, hey guys, like, you can overcome these things. You can live in a different place. You don't have to struggle with all of this. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here with me today.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all you do, Jennifer, to encourage entrepreneurs and senior executives. We need it a lot when we're in the journey. So appreciate your work to do that here with this podcast.
Oh, thank you. All right, you guys, that is everything for today's episode. That's it. Get out there and have a happy, productive day. Bye, y'all.
I hope you found today's episode of the Happy Productive Podcast inspiring. Every successful business is formed by a set of small, consistent, and attainable steps. If you want to learn more, come visit us at jenniferdawncoaching.com to take your next step and learn how to meet your business goals. On our website, you're going to find free resources along with links to the life-changing coaching programs that have transformed the lives of so many of our clients, including the Coaching Academy and our Unbreakable Retreats. Many of them started their journey by listening to this podcast. That's it. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next episode.
This is the She Leads Podcast Network.